Right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast by two brothers about all things football in Portugal. Listen to myself, Albert, and it's a very special episode this week with the breaking news, huge news that Ruben Amorim is set to become Manchester United manager. It calls for a group of great Portuguese football experts to discuss the matter, as well as myself and Barney. Barney, who is joining us from his holiday in Spain. Big news meant he had to dial in, so we really appreciate the effort, Barney. How you doing?
Yeah, good. I'm excited to be here. Managed to get it working with my data and abroad, but yeah, I definitely had to come back for this one, and it's good to be back because it has been a while. So looking forward to it.
Very much so. And we've got from Portugal.net, Tom Kunda. Tom, thank you so much for joining us. And I know what has been a very busy couple of days, but big news means busy times. So I guess it's to be expected.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it's been very busy. And but, you know, what better place to come and have a chat about it than on the Long Ball Football podcast. You know, if you guys, great to see Barney back in action and Pat as well. So, yeah, looking forward to this chat. Yeah, massive news, as you say, Portuguese manager, one of the biggest clubs in the world, about to be managed by another Portuguese manager. So very good for the profile of Portuguese football, huge implications for Portuguese football itself. So I'm sure we'll get onto that. Yeah.
And lastly, we have Patrick Ribeiro. Patrick, a good friend of the show. He's been on the podcast a few times, but I don't think we've ever discussed a story this big with you. So something a bit different today.
Yeah, hopefully this will feel a little bit like therapy, obviously, as a sporting fan. it'll be good to talk it out. Obviously, it's a massive occasion for Portuguese football. Probably the biggest managerial export since AVB, at least, if not going back to Mourinho days. So it's an exciting time for Portuguese football as a whole, particularly for sporting. It's not often we see a manager leave sporting to go to one of Europe's giants, but obviously mixed emotions surrounding it. So, but always happy to chat.
Well, we really appreciate you joining us. There's a lot to discuss, and over the course of the podcast, we're going to try and cover everything from how Ruben Amorim got to where he is today and made him the manager that Manchester United wanted. How he could fit in at United, how what his strengths are, his weaknesses, what kind of players will work well under him, and then also how this could affect Sporting going forward and what they might look for in a future manager. So a lot to dig into. Tom, I will just start with you quickly, though, because obviously, as we record this on Thursday evening, the story still isn't quite yet confirmed, although there was a press conference, which you watched earlier, in which Ruben Amorim seemed to clarify a few things. I don't know if you could elaborate on that and the things that he said in that press conference.
Yeah, so, you know, without actually directly coming out and saying, I am the new Manchester United manager, he basically did everything but say that. He said that everything will be clarified at the end of the game tomorrow, the game Sporting against Estrela da Amadora, the Liga game, in the post-match press conference. You know, then this kind of situation, will he, won't he, in definition, that will come to an end, he said. He'll explain everything, but he didn't do what he did. I think probably looking back on it, he probably regrets it a little bit. At the end of the previous press conference, of course, at the after the game against Nacional, when he kind of said, I just want to talk about the game, so please, all questions about the game. And then he was just bombarded relentlessly with questions about if he was going to United, if he wasn't. And, you know, he's such an amiable, polite person that he kind of felt obliged, I think, to answer those questions. And but then he just kind of tied himself in knots because he obviously couldn't say everything, and just got a little bit messy. And it's actually the first time I've seen Ruben Amorim quite flustered in a press conference. You know, I'm sure we'll talk about that in the course of this podcast, just what a fantastic communicator he is. But yeah, today he was much more calm. He just said, basically, he was asked a few questions, even so, alluding to the fact that he probably wouldn't be the next manager. One of them was, do you think that João Pereira, the B team manager, is ready to make the step up? He basically just said yes. And so it looks very much like tomorrow we will get full clarification that Ruben Amorim is the next Manchester United manager, and possibly in the same press conference that João Pereira will be the new sporting manager.
Yeah, I have to say, I do feel slightly sorry for managers in this situation, especially Amorim, because it must be a very difficult situation to have to navigate when the whole world seems to know what's happening, and it's almost a well-known secret at this point, but you can't quite confirm it. So it does make for some particularly difficult conversations with the press. But as you say, we do expect it to be confirmed very soon. So perhaps even when you're listening to or watching this podcast, it will be confirmed that he's the new manager. I do want to start for those listening who perhaps don't know as much about Ruben Amorim. If it wasn't clear from the beginning, Tom and Patrick are not just Portuguese football experts, but sporting fans themselves. So there's no one better really to get their perspective on who Ruben Amorim as a manager. I'll come to you then, Patrick. If you want to start off just by giving us some background really on Amorim and the impact that he's made at your club over these years, because the success under him has been excellent, but it wasn't always that way before he arrived.
Yeah, so he sort of came into a situation where I sort of felt like the house was on fire a bit, and the president took a massive gamble on him, to be fair. But it was a gamble he really needed to pay off, because if it didn't, we're probably looking at a situation where, particularly in an environment of Portuguese football, things start to look a little bit messy, and all of a sudden we're talking about overthrowing club presidents and whatnot. Because I think Sporting came from a couple of seasons where they tried to be strategic with their surgeries in terms of transfers, and every single player that came through the door, talking the likes of Jesse Rodriguez and Yannick Bolasie, etc., all just kept on being... It was a failure after a failure. And Sporting found themselves in a position where they had no real identity, really. And the more the months went on, the further away they got from the likes of Porto, Benfica, even Braga, who were overtaking them and overshadowing them. And so when a gamble came to get Ruben Amorim, who coincidentally was the Braga manager and was performing at a super high level for them, it was good to see him implement a way in which Sporting almost went back to their roots. So Sporting's more known for bringing through this player or that player. We can sit here and list for days the type of players that Sporting have brought through their academy, from Ronaldo to Nani to Quaresma, Simão. The list is endless. And that's something that's the tradition of Sporting. And it's sort of been lost in the past 10, 20 years. And when he brought that back, and obviously he didn't really have much of an option anyway, because the budget wasn't massive when he arrived. And to be fair to him, he didn't have the most talented of groups as well coming through the ranks as well. But he just showed a lot of character to bring them together. Some excellent man management. I think he's probably got some of the best man management going. And he really brought a group together and made them believe that they could do whatever they wanted to. I think, obviously, everyone will talk about how well Sporting played last year. And to be fair, it's probably one of the best Sporting teams that we've seen in the last 20 to 25 years. But the team that he had to win the first title, it takes something special to do it in those circumstances and with the players he had. I think from then it was that first title just opened the doors, and I think you could see around the place that everyone took to Amorim and everything he believed in. Even if we had an off season, it was believe in his ideas, and it just opened up a new perspective for the whole club and the whole outset on like what could be achieved. It is a shame, obviously, to lose that all of a sudden, especially when you enter a season and all of a sudden you're expecting to defend your title that you won last year. Nobody expects to lose their manager in October, November. But, you know, it's the reality of the game, I'm afraid. If you're not a big, big club like a Manchester United or a Real Madrid or whatever, you're always susceptible to situations like that. So this time it's just come to knock on Sporting's door. It's their time to digest it all. And that's the challenge ahead now.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say that despite obviously that Sporting have lost key players after successful seasons under Amorim, but there has been always that thread of continuity, which he was in recent years. So in some ways, I think it's almost fair to say that the fact that he's been around for 5-6 years and that Sporting have benefited from that has in itself been a good thing. Tom, you've obviously followed Portuguese football for a long time, very closely. How many managers have you seen make the kind of impact at one club that Ruben Amorim has made? Because I don't think we can really understate the impact that he's made in the 5 or 6 years that he's been in charge of the club in terms of breaking up the dominance of Porto and Benfica and turning around the fortunes of Sporting, who had struggled for so many years.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no doubt about it. One of the managers who made the biggest impact, probably, I'd say, ever since I've been living in Portugal, the last 30 years, I suppose the only two you could possibly compare it to is Mourinho, of course, at Porto. You know, people sometimes forget when Mourinho went into Porto, there had been 3 years without winning the championship, which was very unusual for Porto. You know, and 2 years later, they'd won the UEFA Cup, they'd won the Champions League, they'd won everything going. So, you know, it's pretty difficult to beat that. And then Jorge Jesus, when he walked into Benfica, you know, I think the previous 15 years they'd won one league championship, and he just turned them into the dominant force in Portuguese football. They won, I think, 3 out of the next 5 or 6 years. So they're two examples. But the reason I say I think Amorim perhaps even tops those examples is really on the back of what Pat just said. Now, you know, Sporting were in a complete mess, an utter mess. You know, it wasn't that long prior to Amorim's arrival that, of course, they had the infamous day in 2018 when 50 of their own ultras invaded the Alcochete training complex, attacked their own players. That led to, you know, a mass exodus, or it seemed it was going to be a mass exodus. All the players were ready to walk out on the club. Fortunately, a few of them changed their mind. But and then before Amorim came, you know, in the previous year, I think they went through 4 or 5 managers in 1 year. So they were just in a complete mess. They hadn't won a title in 19 years before Amorim turned up. And so to do what he's done, you know, his first full season to win the league, his second season did very well again, quite close to winning the league. Third season was the only disappointing season he's had. But even then, I think the thing about Amorim is you could always see evolution in the team, especially in the attacking side of the game. Sporting just got better and better and better these 5 years. And then, like Pat said, last year, Sporting just played amazing football, you know, beautiful football, absolutely ran away with the league in the end, won, what was it, 10, 12 points or something? They won it by in the end. And I think, you know, all biases aside, I think if Amorim had stayed this season, I've got no doubts that Sporting would have won the league again, you know, barring any bad injuries to key players or something like that. And so if they had done that, it would have been the first time Sporting had won back-to-back league titles in 70 years. You know, so it kind of just, you know, those kind of just simple facts just show you that you cannot, just like you said, Albert, you cannot understate the impact he had not only on Sporting, but on the whole of Portuguese football. And it's quite amazing. I just want to share with you something which was on Sport on TV a couple of days ago, you know, when it first broke, and then it became quite obvious, really, that he was quite soon that he was going to leave Sporting. And I had a few Vox Pop reports around Alvalade, and there was this one which went viral, which was the journalist just went up to a slightly elderly Sporting fan, and he said, "Oh, you know, what do you think of all this? So what do you think of the fact Amorim is, you know, looks like he's leaving?" And the guy, poor guy, you know, is about 60 or 70 years old, started articulating his answer and then just burst out crying. he just started crying, and he couldn't. And the journalist, you know, it's actually quite touching. The journalist said, was like comforting him and saying, okay, I'm not going to ask any more questions. I can see you're very emotional. But it just kind of, in some ways, that shows you, you know, he just had a massive impact, certainly on Sporting and Sporting fans. But the whole of Portuguese football, I could say, you really cannot understate it. It's, you know, it's just a very gigantic. I think I've heard of quite a lot of people and on analysts say that if he'd stayed this season and Sporting had won, he would have written his name down as the greatest Sporting manager of all time. And then some of the other analysts on the same show interrupted him and said, look, it doesn't matter, even if he goes away, you know, he is going to go, isn't he? He is the greatest Sporting manager of all time. So, you know, just a massive, massive impact. You can't understate it.
And that, of course, brings us to where we are now and the news that he's going to set to join Manchester United as the new manager. I'll ask you both this question, but I'll come to Patrick first. I mean, were you surprised to hear that this was going through? Because we've obviously had Amorim linked to big clubs with varying degrees of how strong the rumours are. This summer, there were some fairly strong rumours with Premier League clubs. And I think there's always been this this feeling that he's destined to manage a huge team like Manchester United. And it does look like this is the opportunity that's going to come his way after talks of things like Chelsea and Bayern Munich and all those kind of clubs. So, how do you feel about how it all came about?
I must say, I was a little bit surprised because obviously when it became apparent Ten Hag was on his way out, in my mind, it didn't cross me that Ruben Amorim could be one of them, one of the managers to take over. It would have been, of course, more plausible in a situation like Liverpool, for example, when they got rid of Klopp. I think it made sense. I mean, purely speaking from Amorim's perspective, like Liverpool's a nice, organised, set club. In a dimension like the Premier League, it's a nice club to take over, although it's never easy to follow in Jurgen Klopp's footsteps, for example. But it would have been a nice challenge for him, something to get him started. Again, there was talks of Manchester City for when Pep perhaps calls it a day, or Viana, the director of football at Sporting, will be joining them at the end of the season. So you can see that link, that relationship being recreated. So it would have been a logical one for Amorim, given as well the challenge ahead this season of being the first Sporting group in however many years to win back-to-back titles. It would have worked out well from a personal perspective for him. Man United, in my opinion, obviously a gigantic club, but they're also one that, quite similar to Sporting when Amorim took over, are in like a huge mess. They're so disorganised in terms of their planning and general structuring of their sides. And it's one of those clubs that, in my eyes, like I feel like it will take a lot of time and patience to sort of work from the ground up and make sure that everything's ticking and as it should be, playing as a Man United team should be, challenging for titles, etc. It's a massive challenge. It's quite daunting even, but it's credit to Amorim for fancying it and jumping at the opportunity. I was trying to position myself in Amorim's shoes when an offer like that comes about. And I can see why he takes it. Obviously, he's done pretty much almost everything that there is to do as a Sporting manager. He's won the league title twice, which is what really matters to 9 out of 10 Sporting fans anyway. So his stock in terms of a Sporting figure is probably as high as it can be, unless he goes on to win the Champions League or something, of course. But realistically speaking, he's right here at the top. That makes it a good time now to leave, with that in mind. And with a job like Manchester United, the opportunity to manage in the Premier League coming, it sort of makes sense. Because imagine that if for whatever reason such a positive start this season turns into a little bit of a letdown towards the end of the season, where will his stop be at the end of the season? You know, football is as much about talent as it is about fashionable trends sometimes, and you can be the flavour of the month. Now, come the end of the season, it's a completely different story. Erik ten Hag himself was the flavour of the month at one point. He was the most coveted manager going after however many seasons and positive displays in the Champions League at Ajax. So I think a manager, just like a player, he has to analyse his opportunities when they come. There's a famous saying that goes like, don't miss your train, don't miss your bus. And I think Mourinho's decided, and quite rightly so, that this is his time to make that jump. So, I respect him for taking that jump. It won't be easy for him, as I say. Man United are where they are, and you can see why they are where they are based on their squad and their general organisation. So he does have a massive challenge at hand, but. He's basically done it before at Sporting, so I'm sure he can aspire to do it again at Manchester.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know a lot of Sporting fans are disappointed that Amorim's leaving, and a lot of what you hear from fans in these kind of situations when a manager or a player leaves midway through the season is, oh, why didn't they wait out to the end of the season and go then? But obviously, Ruben Amorim has no control over when Erik ten Hag sacks and when the call from Manchester United comes in. So from that perspective, it's a little bit out of his hands. I want us to spend a little bit of time.
Could I just go come ahead. In there, just do it with one thing? I just slightly disagree with Pat on one point he made there about the suitability of the club for Amorim, you know, comparing it with Liverpool and Manchester City. In my opinion, this is the perfect club for Ruben Amorim. Out of those three, if I to choose, you know, I often swap messages with Sean Gillen, of course, another excellent journalist on Portugal.net, a big Manchester United fan, and we've said this quite a few times. We came to the conclusion over the last few months that Amorim should be the next Manchester United manager because, for instance, you're absolutely right, of course, Pat. Liverpool, Manchester City, in a much better place, properly functioning, well-organised clubs. But I think in some ways that makes it even more difficult, especially Manchester City. You know, I think whoever takes the Manchester City job, oh my word, that is, how do you follow Guardiola? You know,
it's true.
You know, he's probably, whoever follows will have to follow a manager who's won probably five championships in a row, you know, playing the most amazing football season after season. So it would have been very difficult, you know, and even whoever follows Guardiola, even if they win, you know, people would say for years it's down to Guardiola, you know, the foundations he put there. And Liverpool again, you know, like Pat mentioned, you know, very difficult following a figure like Klopp, although Slot seems to be, you know, making a good fist of it at the moment. You go to Manchester United, just like when he was at Sporting, you know, they're in such a bad shape that, first of all, he's got experience of turning it around, you know, turning around as a sleeping giant, you can say. So in some ways, he's got that similar job. Of course, it's different because in Portugal, you've got basically two rivals you have to beat. In England, you know, you've got four or five other teams, highest quality teams, or at least teams with the highest quality squads in world football. So it will be more difficult. But, you know, anything he does at Manchester United, if he does turn it around, you know, and I think he will be given time because, you know, they're at such a low ebb. Then I'm sure they won't expect to be challenging for the league, you know, in this season probably. So I think it's actually the kind of perfect background because of the similarities to when he took over at Sporting.
I think that's a really interesting point. And I hadn't made that connection myself actually between the state that the club is in when he joined between Sporting and Manchester United. I think that's a very interesting point. I should address the elephant in the room. Unfortunately, we've lost Barney. We had a very ambitious idea of getting him to dial in from his hotel room in Tenerife to discuss the big news. Unfortunately, the hotel Wi-Fi has let him down, so we'll have to get Barney's thoughts another time. I want to dig in with Patrick about Manchester United and their squad and all that stuff soon, but just quickly before we do that, Tom, one thing that we always hear when either a player from a smaller league or a manager from a smaller league moves to a bigger club, the one question mark there always is can they make that step up? Are they able to handle the size of the club? All that kind of stuff. I'm interested to get your perspective on that in terms of Amorim, in will he be able to handle a club the size of Manchester United at such a young age? I mean, I know you've seen a lot of press conferences of his. I know you've kind of, I don't know if you've seen him in his training sessions or anything like that, but you know him pretty well as a manager. It's something that I'm not certain about myself, so I'm interested to get your thoughts.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, it's a fair question. And, you know, I can't honestly give you the answer because, of course, we don't know, do we? Sporting, obviously, you know, one of the biggest clubs in Portugal. Huge pressure as in all the big three in Portugal to win almost every game, basically, you know, unless you're playing another big three side. And but you can't compare it, obviously, to, you know, the one of the biggest clubs in the world, in the most prestigious league in the world. So we'll just have to wait and see. The only thing I would say is that he's, you know, the assets or the strong points he's shown at Sporting during his 5 years apparently are things which you would have thought are transferable, namely his ability to get his message across to the players, his ability to get everyone on the same page, his ability to create, so, you know, this is one of the point, Pat's first points, which I think is really important, his ability to get everybody together, working as a team, pulling in the same direction. You know, that first, Pat more or less said this, you know, that first league championship, which Sporting won, you look at the team and player for player, compare it to Benfica, compare it to Porto, you know, Sporting had no right to win that championship. They only won that championship because he managed to get everyone work pulling in the same direction. His communication skills, of course, everyone knows he's got incredibly good communication skills. And so all of these, his ability to develop players individually, even, you know, before we start talking about the collective, you look at, I think it's always the sign of a great manager, how a player develops, you know, under him. You know, is he a better player when he first started being trained by the coach than he was when, you know, is he a better player after being trained by that coach for a few months or a few years than he was when they first came together? And with, you know, with Amorim, that he just, you know, passes that test with flying colours. So all of those things, apparently, you know, they're kind of football related. And so it's, you know, if he can do it in the football environment, it shouldn't really make much difference if it's in Sporting or in Manchester United, wherever it is. Those are qualities which should stand him in good stead. So, yeah, I think that he's got what it takes to be a success there.
Yeah, it makes me feel better as well, actually, because you're absolutely right. I mean, the main thing you have to give him credit for is developing players at any age, really. Obviously, we know what he can do with the young players he's brought through. As Patrick said, so many young players in a way that Sporting hadn't done for a little while and that they've been famous for. And now they've got back to that. And of course, that'll be brilliant at Manchester United. But equally, he develops the players at any stage of their career, which I think is a huge asset. You know, you look at someone like Sebastian Coates, who he kind of transformed into a real leader and a captain at centre-back for so many years. And that was a senior player. So, you know, I feel like he can bring those assets to Manchester United. Patrick, one thing that I think a lot of people have been talking about Amorim, which we haven't discussed yet, is the way that he plays football. And obviously we know that he's very wedded to his 3-4-3 style of football. I imagine that he'll be bringing that into Manchester United. I can't see him changing that. I don't know whether you agree or whether he'll change. You can see him changing his style at all. And if he doesn't, then have Manchester United got the players to do that? And do you think that it's a squad that will be able to take on Amorim's message and his style pretty quickly?
Well, I think the important thing here, and there's lessons for Amorim to learn when looking at his predecessor, was to stick to what you know, stick to what you're good for. Like his football at Sporting and probably even at Braga has attracted Manchester United. So take that with you. I think Ten Hag probably was a bit spooked when he tried to do that and coming from Ajax. I think he had a big, heavy defeat against Brentford and whatnot. And his general record against the top 10 in the Premier League, especially away from home, was pretty poor. I think Ten Hag fell into the temptation a little bit to be a lot more pragmatic than what he actually was at Ajax. And so he sort of escaped from the football that he was well known for. I think Amorim has to look at that and try to be brave enough not to fall into that trap. And I think the beauty of his own setup that he had at Braga and Sporting, that's obviously done so well at the top level, so why would you change? But the beauty of his system is that it, on paper, it's just a 3-4-2-1. But actually, as the game evolves, it's so interchangeable that sometimes it looks like it's a 2-4-2-2 and sometimes you even have like three attacking midfielders. The overloads that move with the ball are so unique, and they're just shapes that you can only really get from a fluid formation such as his. And I think he's really mastered that at Sporting, particularly this season, and it shows in how well Sporting have started the season as well. He's gained a lot of experience playing against teams, for example, like Atalanta, who have very similar systems, and they play man for man in terms of their marking. I think a lot of those qualities can definitely be transferable to Manchester United. In fact, it could even enhance Manchester United. When I think about their centre-backs, for example, when you've got big centre-halves such as Harry Maguire and De Ligt, they're not really players you want to play in a two-man defence that get dragged out wide. They're not the centre halves you want to be left isolated. At the same time, when you look at more mobile defenders such as Lisandro Martinez or Lindelof, that aren't perhaps as physically imposing, when you have that support of an extra centre back, especially like laterally, like it really fits them. And I think the problem with Manchester United at the moment is that defence, which is obviously seen as a weakness, last year I think they, the amount of shots they allowed inside the box was by far one of the worst records in the league. I actually think a lot of that was due to this vacancy that they had sitting in front of defence, and they couldn't protect the defence well at all. It wasn't so much that the defence was bad, it was just the organisation in front of it. By adding an extra element, so say three centre-backs and a ball-winning midfielder, which they have in Ugarte, used to play with Amorim at Sporting, they've got the experience in Casemiro as well. I actually think that block there could be very solid. And then moving forward, you know, you've got the young Kobbie Mainoo, who could very easily play a very similar role to what Morita does at Sporting, be that dynamic midfielder where you can, you know, crash the box, also play between the lines. He's a player I think will really excel, and we'll see Amorim, we'll see him shape him to the midfielder that he can be. Moving forwards, Bruno Fernandes, of course, a player we all know. I think he could be very similar to what Pedro Gonçalves is for Sporting. He's that attacking midfielder who will chip in with the goals, will chip in with the assists, but can also be very flexible and key coming into midfield and making sure that they have those overloads in midfield, they have that dominance in midfield, or in wide areas, in half spaces. The striker, Højlund, very similar characteristics to Gyökeres. You also have Joshua Zirkzee, another very young striker. He likes to dribble, very self-sufficient. Got similarities, I would say, in terms of his associative play to Paulinho. So I could see, for example, where Sporting last year had a lot of joy with Paulinho playing with Gyökeres together, two strikers. Maybe that's a facet we can see with Man United. And historically, you know, Man United love a strike partnership. So I'm sure that will pull at the heartstrings. I think the only thing I find interesting, which could be quite sticky, are those wide players. at Manchester United. And the wide players are so important for Sporting. They're the players that keep the width so that you can then have success with the overloads in the middle. I think as time went on, we saw Mourinho get braver and braver with his wide players. He had more attacking wide players. We saw Nunsanch and Jenny last year. This year, we've seen Jenny and Kenda. But these are wingers. They're not really defensive players. They're wingers. And of course, at Manchester United, you have the likes of Dalot, who can do a great job out wide. He's very good going forwards anyway. Luke Shaw as well on the other side whenever he's fit. But do they have quite enough craft, or do they have a player who can add that sort of craft? I think the wide players would be the interesting thing to see what Amorim does, because particularly even the wide players that play off the striker in Sporting system, they're more creative midfielders, such as Pedro Gonçalves or Trincão. Whereas at Man United, you've got someone like Amad Diallo who could do the job. But then you've got someone like Marcus Rashford and Garnacho who are more pure inside forwards. You know, they will float more up wide than centrally from starting position. So it'll be interesting to see how he manages with those two players, whether perhaps Garnacho, you start seeing him more as a wing back, more willing runner. There's a few areas there which perhaps he will even target in the January transfer window or in the summer. But in overall, I do see facets of Amorim's play with a 3-4-3 really favouring and stabilising Manchester United, particularly defensively. So I actually see it being a good fit. At first, when I was thinking of it, I was like, how is he going to transfer this over? Mm-hmm. But the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. So I think it could be a very good experiment for them.
I think that's a really positive perspective on it. And I agree, actually, the more, because I was thinking of that same question about which players could do well under Amorim. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, actually, there were quite a few players in there, specifically, you know, the central midfielders. Ugarte, who's played under him before, and Kobbie Mainoo. And I mean, as an England national team fan, I did have a slight dream of Marcus Rashford becoming the Manchester United Gyökeres. But I don't know, maybe that's a bit of a pipe dream. But you're so right to point out, for anyone at home who's not familiar with Amorim, that how important, I mean, we still call them wing backs, but there's no back about the way that they play, especially in recent years under Amorim. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if Amad Diallo becomes a really key player for Manchester United on the right hand side. Tom, I mean, obviously there's a few Portuguese players at Manchester United, of course, Bruno Fernandes being the main one. And I agree with Patrick that he's a player that I think could do really well under Ruben Amorim, especially with a leadership role in the team. The other one, though, of course, is Diego Dalot, who perhaps might find it slightly more difficult to fit into Amorim's system as a more traditional fullback.
Yeah, not sure. You know, maybe... Because, yeah, like you say, the attacking wide players, wing backs, I still call them wing backs because it is still, you know, they when Sporting don't have the ball and when they're defending, it still is their job to, you know, help the defensive side of the game. And Dalot, I think he is, like you say, a bit more of a traditional fullback, but quite an attacking fullback, you know. So I think he could actually fit that system quite well. I have to actually say, talking about Dalot, of course, that maybe he is a big part of the reason that this week played out how it did, because missing that open goal, didn't he, last week, that would have put Man United 1-0 up against West Ham. Imagine he scores that, Man United win the game, and we're not having this conversation. Ruben Amorim.
Are you suggesting that Diego Dalot had heard the rumours about Amorim before that game and knew what he had to do?
Planned. Yeah. Yeah, I was joking that I'd never forgive him. Yeah, of course I will forgive him. I support all Portuguese players, especially Portuguese players abroad. So, yeah, I actually think Dalot could be, you know, I mean, look, Dalot has forced himself into Portugal's side, you know, big favourite really of Roberto Martinez when João Cancelo really owned that position. But I know Cancelo also sometimes plays on the left, and he plays both of them, but basically he's played a lot for Portugal. He's played well. I think for all Manchester United's woes, and they, you know, they've had a very bad time recently, last season, this season. But from what I gather, most of the Manchester United fans are actually quite, they said Adalo is one of the few bright points of, you know, recent times. He's actually been quite consistent and quite a good performer for them. So, I would definitely think he would. And of course, being Portuguese, although at Amorim, you know, obviously that won't come into his thinking, but for at least a very short term, you know, it will help him, obviously, to, you know, to get his message across quicker. Maybe Adalo will help him, you know, if he's got any language problems or just, you know, some practical things about settling in England. I suppose him and Bruno and, you know, even the Portuguese speakers over there, Brazilians as well. So is that a little slight advantage in that sense? So, I would expect Adalo to be certainly, you know, I think he could fit into the Amorim system quite nicely. Very interested just to come back. Fantastic, brilliant explanations from Pat there on all the tactical sides of it. And very interested, especially on his thoughts with Bruno Fernandes, because I was talking about this the other day because some people have said, oh, you know, Bruno Fernandes, I know we're trying, and Pat was doing it there and he did it fantastically. We're trying to kind of fit the Manchester United in pieces into this current sporting team. When you say, who's Pedro Gonçalves, who's Francisco Trincão, who's Morita, exactly. And I think Fernandes is a really interesting one because, of course, notionally a midfielder, but I agree with Pat. I think he could be the perfect player to play in that, you know, as part of the front three, but like he says, in the half spaces or off the striker. So like your Pedro Gonçalves or your Trincão, obviously it's not the same kind of player, Trincão, but in that position, you know, playing between the lines. And he's such an accomplished player, such a brilliant player. Bruno Fernandes, a big goal threat, you know, and a huge assister as well, that I think he could be kind of the perfect Pedro Gonçalves figure for Manchester United with Amorim.
Yeah, no doubt. I think he's going to be a big player under Amorim. We've discussed how he's going to fit in at Manchester United a lot now. I do want to talk about, of course, how this is going to affect Sporting going forward, because they're in the middle of an incredible season, won every league game so far this season, playing possibly the best football we've ever seen them play under Ruben Amorim. This will undoubtedly have a big impact on the title race, and I know for a fact that Benfica and Porto fans are licking their lips at the prospect of this departure, which tells you everything you know need to know about the reputation that that Amorim has. Tom, I know you said that João Pereira is lined up to become the new first team manager from the B team. It's something that I think makes a lot of sense. I think pretty much everyone was in agreement that if Sporting needed a new manager, the most important thing was continuity in terms of what was being built at Sporting, in terms of the bigger picture, the way that the team plays and the types of signings that they've been making. And perhaps one thing we haven't really discussed at all is Hugo Viana leaving as well, who has also been a big part of Sporting's success. And now with the two of them gone, perhaps there are big changes. But like I said, that continuity in terms of the manager, I didn't think personally that there was any point in going out and getting a kind of maybe a bigger name manager to come in to replace Amorim if it meant sacrificing all the work that had been done to build the structures that are in place today and to build the squad that is performing so well in the league and which has delivered so much for the fans and the owners.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sporting have played the same way for 5 years, haven't they, under Amorim. And a lot of those players, actually, you know, this is also one of the reasons I think we were discussing it in one of our earlier podcasts this season, wasn't it, Albert, about, you know, the stability at Sporting. That's really one of the reasons for their success. And you look at this Sporting side, you know, Pedro Gonçalves, we just talked about him, he's been there the whole 5 years, you know, Matheus Reis, Bragança, you know, Gonçalo Inácio. There's quite a few players there who've been there for the whole 5 years. Some of them have been there for 4 years, for 3 years, for 2 years. You know, even the kind of new, I suppose you could say, star players, Gyökeres and Hulmand, you know, they've been there for virtually a season and a half now. They're absolutely, you know, they know, like, the, you know, the back of their hand, this system, how it works, how to implement it, even the nuances. So, yeah, it would have been very difficult, I think, to bring someone from the outside it's such a specific way of playing as well as being something which has been solidified over a long period of time. It's something which you don't see very often. You know, I can't really see this replicated in lots of other teams around Europe. So it makes sense. Obviously, João Pereira, he actually played under Amorim in that first season at Sporting Winter Championship. He was just at the end of his career. You know, he didn't play much, but he played a few games throughout the season, maybe 10 games or so. And then, of course, he stayed in the Sporting structure. He works in the B team. So obviously has close. It's interesting today in the press conference, Amorim was saying that he thinks that João Pereira is ready for the step up. He says, whenever I receive players from the B team, they're ready. I don't really have to do anything with them, or, you know, they're ready for first team action. So just praising João Pereira in that sense. Of course, the big question is, it's one thing being, you know, a B team manager, and it's one thing being somebody who knows the system back to front, but to be actually that main man for his first job, you know, his first big managerial job, it's a big ask. So it makes sense in the sense that, you know, it is continuity, and that's what you want, but it is also a bit of a risk because, you know, will he be a good manager? We don't know. Nobody knows, really. But I think it's probably Sporting have arrived at the conclusion, at least at this stage, that it would be less of a risk to promote João Pereira to become the coach and to try and continue along the same path, and to bring someone else who naturally will have their own ideas and, you know, might just, you know, destabilize everything.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a sense that this is a good idea in the short term, and certainly it will allow Sporting to not derail their season. Patrick, it's a very simple question, but yeah, how are you feeling about how this could affect Sporting in the short term this season with the change in manager? But I guess also in the medium to long term with Viana leaving as well and the direction that the club will need to go.
Well, it's an interesting one because, you know, back to the start of the conversation, we were talking about which club as Ruben Amorim would you ideally want to take. And when I said that Man United probably wasn't top of his list in terms of how much of a mess it was, if we can compare it to how good Sporting are now. And if you put yourself in João Pereira's shoes, all of a sudden you're thinking, yeah, I mean, this team's won 9 out of 9 games. It's finely oiled. It's ready. But, you know, it's a massive jump from the B team and working with youngsters where you don't have anywhere near as much pressure to dealing with first team players and all the pressures that come with that. Because for sure, from the get-go, people will be questioning whether he's ready or not. But, you know, it's not something that's new. Like, Amorim had the same questions posed at him. It's just a matter of trying. Me personally, as a fan, I would have liked a situation where, for example, yes, we accept and Amorim goes to Manchester United, but then Sporting try to hold on to one of the assistants, for example, who's obviously following him out to Old Trafford. But in terms of continuity, I would have preferred that. I would have tried. And I don't know if Sporting did or didn't try. Maybe they did. But that would have been a good idea, a good plan, at least in the short term, to see whether that works. But, you know, I could be here saying that and denying João Pereira the chance of becoming the next big thing all of a sudden, Sporting on a roll. That may have been the plan all along. That may have been the plan to bring him on and sort of, as you say, like, there are players that have been promoted to the first team, and that transition has more or less been seamless, in the words of Ruben Amorim. So there is work being done from the ground up, from the B teams, from the youth teams. So perhaps this is a wider plan in terms of a structure that Sporting already have in place. They believe in this this ethos, this philosophy that Amorim installed some 5 years ago now. So this may have been an answer that was in the pipework. And if it is, you have to believe in a club. You have to believe in the ideas that they've been growing all this time. I think it could be interesting. Again, in terms of names, I'm not really sure who's out there that could take Sporting onwards. It will always feel like a blow when such a top manager leaves you. I don't think there's any way out of that sort of situation. But at the same time, Sporting are also in a very privileged situation where, as you say, they've won 9 games out of 9. They're in a very good position in the Champions League. They're arguably playing the best football in Portugal right now, and all their top players are in great form. So the conditions are there for someone to take over and sort of continue the job. Whether that makes Sporting favourites or not anymore, don't know, but it's one of those you have to take it game by game anyway. So I'm confident, also worried, but confident at the same time. It's a weird mixture of emotions. Because at the end of the day, I still believe in the squad and the players, and it's such a good group of players that I think most decent managers would have a good run with them. So you know, I think there's work to be done, of course, but it's a good project at hand.
Absolutely. I mean, we've discussed so much on this podcast, and we've covered every angle and every possibility, but the fact remains that for all parties involved, this is still a big step into the dark. Nobody quite knows exactly what's going to happen, and I think that's unavoidable with this type of move, both for Amorim's perspective in terms of going to a huge club like Manchester United, and for Sporting, for whom I think, you know, you guys will know that I think everybody knew this day was coming at some point, that Amorim would leave. He was always going to take that next step at some point. Now is the time with the Manchester United job coming up, and yeah, we just have to now wait and see what happens for both parties, and hopefully, fingers crossed for everybody involved, it will be a great success. And just my two cents on Amorim, you know, covering his time at Sporting for the last few years has been incredible to see such a exciting manager at such a young age take control of the league in a way that he has, and the influence that he's had on Portuguese football has been amazing. So I think everyone, even the most cold-hearted Sporting fan, will wish him all the success in the world at Manchester United. So yeah, very exciting times, gents. I think we will leave it there for this episode. I think we've talked about as much as we can about Amorim, although we could probably continue the conversation on for a few more hours if we wanted to. I don't know whether either of you wanted to have one last word on Amorim, but yeah, I just want to say thanks to you both for joining me, Tom and Patrick. It's been a pleasure to chat to you both.
Okay, great. Yeah, good talking to you, Albert. It was good, like Pat said at the start, good cathartic session.
Yeah, I hope you both feel a bit better. All right, well, I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much, guys. Yeah, see you soon.